I don't know about you, but I can't be in a bad mood and listen to the Cuban Overture by George Gershwin. We're listening to the Dallas Symphony Orchestra conducted by Eduardo Mata. I'm so pleased to welcome to the WLRH studios Maestro Gregory Voida and percussionist Sean Rittenour. Hey, y'all, welcome back.
Hello. Thanks.
Good to see y'all again. We're just talking about how this music is just so infectious. Mm-hmm. Especially the percussive rhythms, and it's so familiar to a lot of people. And you were saying it was a challenge for you last night at rehearsal.
Yeah, we rehearsed this right before we rehearsed the concerto, and I'm playing in the orchestra as well as doing the concerto this time. But
it was your choice, just
this was my choice. Okay. Yeah, uh-huh. But it was the least focused I've ever been, I think, during a piece because I've never had a concerto following, you know, playing in a section.
It's a very percussive first half of
and the, second half, and, too.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of percussion in this program.
Right. So where did you start when you were programmed? Did you start with the percussion concerto and then build it out from there, or how did this come about?
Well, I think Copland Symphony No. 3, which is in the second half of the program, was the starting point. And exactly because of the percussive nature of the music, and you know the Fanfare for the Common Man is in the last movement of the piece, gave me the idea that maybe it's time for another percussion concerto here in Huntsville. And then also the Gershwin you just heard is what, 5-6 percussionists?
I mean, it's
seven actually. So a lot of sounds and a lot of instruments and a lot of players. And so although three pieces are very different in nature and in style and in mood, but they definitely all employ a whole bunch of percussion players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About how many percussion players,
well,
and how much stuff?
A lot of instruments. We have seven players on this program, but with the Akijo, there's all sorts of odd instruments, 5-octave marimba, a propane tank, stuff like that back there. So we got the whole kitchen sink.
I'm curious, not about the music so much, but the staging. Where are you going to put all the stuff on the stage?
Yeah, that's always a bit of a predicament, but we just come and collect our real estate nice and early, and everybody else scrunches on the stage. That's pretty much how it works.
So logistically, we actually have all the percussion instruments in place during the Gershwin. So the Gershwin opens the program, and so we have all like the stations practically.
Right.
There's a separate station for every movement for Sean. So he would just walk from one station to the next in between movements. So these things are preset on stage. You're going to see a lot of percussion instruments between the orchestra and the audience during the Gershwin. And of course, in the Akijo, just going to reveal all the secrets of what is what and how they sound and what do you have to do to make them sound.
Yeah, I've been going to the symphony for several years now, and I don't think I've ever seen a propane tank on stage.
Yeah, yeah. You won't even see it. It's actually behind the marimba, but you will certainly hear it. It's
so tell me about this percussion concerto.
I've known Andy since I was in college. We went to school together, and I was actually there his first year at school, and when he wrote his first piece, he asked me to play on it. I didn't. I was stressed about auditions, but my younger brother played on it. And, you know, we've been friends ever since, and I knew he was writing a new concerto. And when Gregory asked me to play a concerto, I messaged him. I was like, hey, what's going on with that new percussion concerto? He's like, well, it's premiering in October in Oregon. I was like, can we play it in January? You know, and he's like, well, I got to ask, you know, sort of permission to make sure. He's like, I think legally it's okay because it's in the next year, but let me just, you know, check with Colin Curry and the Oregon Symphony and see if it's okay. And they were all for it.
Many of you might not know that. That's my previous job. I was a resident conductor of the Oregon Symphony before I became the music director of the Huntsville Symphony. And, you know, that orchestra does a lot for new music, and they always find exciting music and interesting people and composers that can really, you know, shake up a little bit the repertoire and add a flavor to the symphonic sounds that we all know. And Akua's piece is one of those pieces where you feel where it's coming from. You hear the tradition in it. It's, you know, the repetitive minimalist music and also some movie music here and there. But also it's a very unique and a new sound, the way he mixes percussion instruments with the orchestra.
I read the review online from the Classical Voice of North America, and it was very well received in Portland.
Yeah, I was there, actually. It's a really interesting sound. You don't think the first movement's all rice bowls, which you would not think is a very dynamic instrument to listen to, but it's lightly amplified, and it has, I don't know what the word is, but I can't help but think of Andy as a steel pan player.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, and the steel pan is a very intense instrument, but you have to play extremely light on it. Otherwise, you don't get a good sound. And so it as soon as like I started playing on the rice balls, I realized, oh my God, this is just the steel pan.
I think it's difficult for people to visualize this. Yeah. Can you describe how rice balls are?
Yes.
How do you play rice balls? I mean, you normally just put them in the microwave and eat whatever you eat.
Well, I set them up in sort of a weird, you know, piano format. You know, black keys, white keys, just like a piano, but in a way where it's easier to play. And I strike them with a chopstick just inside the lip of the bowl so that it gets the right amount of ring. And you can't play too harshly on them. You'll break them. But if you get just the right angle, it gets actually a very beautiful sound.
Well, how do you find them and how do you make sure they're the correct tune?
Thankfully, I live in New York City, and there's a very robust Chinatown.
Uh-huh.
And so there's all sorts of Asian grocery stores and markets.
He's banned from 5 restaurants already because he was trying the rice balls.
I've been cursed at in Mandarin at some stores for hitting all the bowls. I'm not kidding. I would just go. There's just rows of different size, you know, rice bowls for restaurants to purchase. Like they have them in mass amounts, and I would just go down the line, and you'd find like pockets where like, okay, these are all within this. This whole step, so I'm just looking for the perfect pitch, and I'm sort of amazed that I, with all the sense that there are in a pitch, that I even find any that are right on. But it takes the first set took about 8 hours in stores in Chinatown. The second set went a little quicker. Helps that my girlfriend has perfect pitch. I just walk her around with me, and
but did she take a video?
Just run.
Oh yeah, we do have a video. Yeah, I should post that. Yeah. Yeah, you get a G natural and you sprint. Yeah, that's pretty much how it works. But yeah, it's all found sounds, you know. So that
now I'm almost afraid to ask about the propane tank.
The propane tank. Well, okay. Well, we have our former principal percussionist and current section percussionist Terry Cornett is a. Well, anytime I don't have an instrument, I can call Terry and I'm like, do you have this? And he always has an answer. So he just brought a propane tank. He had one. I knew he would, too. I just put it on the rental list. He's like, sure, a propane tank. What size do you want? You know, it was that kind of thing. But, yeah, I thank God for Terry because he's always got stuff
well,
like
you're
that.
Going to Chinese stores to buy instrument and Terry is going to junkyards.
Yes.
So exactly. He told me that once.
Yeah.
So we're very resourceful here at the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra.
Very.
If you could, how does it... I guess, what'd you compare it to? Is there something, for some of us who've never or aren't familiar with this particular piece, is there something that we might know that it kind of might remind us of?
Ooh. Help me.
Long silence on the air.
You,
I don't know any other rice bowl concertos.
That's
I don't know. You know, I mean, as I said, some of the minimalist tradition of American music like Steve Reich and things like that. I mean, just for like seconds or a half a minute,
a little bit.
You kind of hear it in there. But I guess the composer being a steel drum player, you know, that type of music comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, And I don't really know. I mean, I think he has a very unique sound.
He's unmistakable. If you hear an Akijo piece, it sounds like an Akijo piece, which is what I like about his music. But also, he has he is a percussionist, primarily steel pan, but he also had a long education in drum corps.
Oh,
DCI.
Cool. Uh-huh.
And so he has a, you know, if you ever see Andy, he's just got like chops in his hands. And then he does it on the steel pan. And it's just totally mind blowing to watch him sort of execute this very drum corps-esque facility on a steel pan with this lightness and flair. So like that really translates in all of his percussion writing, this sort of exactness and rhythm and articulation. And I know that that comes from that world. But the actual like, the sound of the orchestra, I don't know if I could have a comparison exactly, but it always sounds like his music, which is what mm-hmm. I particularly love about it. And I think that's why he's been so successful so quickly in his compositional career.
And this is only the second time this piece has been performed.
Yeah, yeah, very exciting.
So if you mess up, no one's going to know.
Yeah. Colin Curry might, but I don't think he's coming, so.
Yeah, Colin Curry, tell us who he is.
Colin Curry is the person who commissioned and premiered this piece with the Oregon Symphony. He's a very, very famous percussion soloist. He also premiered the Higdon
that you also
concerto,
played, yeah.
Which I also played here. So,
I saw that.
You know, when you have a big percussionist like him, they're just so we're so lucky to have them because they champion so many new works, you know, for the format of a percussion concerto, which is so rarely done.
Well, Gregory's written one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, a trio concerto,
yeah,
which we
exactly,
did.
Yeah.
And I think that was the last time I was in here, maybe, mm-hmm. was when we were talking drums, drums, drums.
That's right.
So, yeah, but we're always grateful for guys like Colin Curry because they champion so much new music for the instrument.
And I feel very fortunate as a resident of Huntsville, Alabama, to be able to not only to talk about it, but to hear it and see it. I imagine it's quite a spectacle, too.
I'm hoping it will be. I'm thinking it's going to be very well received. I think the piece is excellent and fun to listen to, not challenging in the sense that, you know, often people are scared by new music. I think it's going to...
But you know what scares me about this? Two words. Toy piano.
Toy, oh.
Yeah.
Well, luckily, I don't have to conduct that movement.
No, yeah. So. Julia Dina, who's the concertmaster of the Huntsville Symphony, and me play a little duo. It's like kind of a palate cleanser, if you will, I feel like, between the movements. It's very charming.
It's part of the piece, though, right? It's between the second and the third movement,
yeah,
so
yeah.
We're not adding anything.
Okay.
It's in the concerto.
Everybody stop. We're going to tink, tink, tink. Play
then, yeah, this is in the concerto. It happens after the second movement, and it's a groovy little charming quick. I say palate cleanser. That doesn't do it justice, but it does kind of feel like that when mm-hmm. you have the whole piece there. And Julia, we've rehearsed it a couple times on our own, not with the orchestra, and she's great. Came right together, and it's a fun sound. The toy piano is eerie and cute all at once. It's a very interesting instrument.
So I think this is a time to actually talk about the concept of the piece. It's like every movement.
Is a material.
Material.
Right.
So the rice bowls.
Ceramic.
Ceramic.
And then we have rosewood.
Which is the marimba. It's practically a movement for marimba. And it's almost
strings.
Yeah, it's mostly strings.
Until a very
And
nice
then the
surprising.
Toy piano is the hammers.
Yeah.
And then in the last movement?
What the heck's it called?
Wait a minute, I have it. The final movement, steel.
Steel. Yeah, because it's
vibraphone.
Glockenspiel.
Yeah.
And
vibraphone, yeah. And... I have to wear earplugs while I play that because that steel is loud.
It's kind of like drum set music, that the last one, right?
Yeah.
The way you play it.
It's a very Akijoian setup, this Glockenspiel drum set. So I have a bass drum and a snare drum, just like a drum set. But instead of cymbals, I play a Glockenspiel, so I have pitches. That's the concept. And he actually uses that on a piece he previously wrote. I think it's called No One to No One, different spellings for no. And it's a really fun little piece and just a very sort of, a Akijo sound, this Glockenspiel drum set.
Well, that's in the first half. Then we get to hear the Copland sound. Which movement do you want to start with here?
Why don't we start with the fourth movement?
All right.
I mean, you know, it's fascinating to me to kind of see and hear how a composer touches his own material and turns into something else. It's exciting to me to see that, to discover that because we all do that, composers, right? You know, recycle material or reevaluate what this material could be or what the potential is in the music I've written before. So Fanfare for a Common Man practically turns into a full symphony in this case, but definitely the last movement is all about Fanfare for a Common Man.
Sean Rittenour is doing some air percussion here as we listen to the opening of the fourth movement. Yes, it sounds an awful lot like Fanfare for the Common Man, because it is. That actually came first, and then Copland expanded on it.
Well, it came first as a casual composition. Copland and other composers were commissioned to write a piece during Second World War. And after the war, he turned this into this very American, you know, great piece of music that's about 43 minutes long. That's the reason why you can't play it on the
right? I don't play it a lot, yeah.
But it's fantastic how this very simple and very effective material actually turns into this huge musical building called Symphony number 3, because the fourth movement is not the only place where he's using this material. The entire symphony is actually based on these steps and harmonies that you just heard.
Right. The first time I listened to it, again, we don't play it a lot because it's 43 minutes, but the Carlos Prieto conducted it several years ago, so I was listening to it. And to me, listening to it for the first time, it was kind of like driving along unfamiliar territory and then seeing the skyline of the city. There's the fanfare. Okay, I know where I am now. I'm familiar with this. But then listening to it this time, it's like, oh, that's so Copland. Mm. So what is it about Copland that makes him sound like Copland, that makes somebody like me go, oh, Copland?
Ooh, that's a difficult question. I mean, every composer has staples, you know, harmonic progressions and rhythms and just a texture of the music that you can recognize a composer by, and Copland has quite a few of those. So actually, when you talk about a style of a composer, you talk about those elements of music that you can recognize. Mm-hmm. And even if it's an early Copland, we actually have done an early Copland piece here not long ago, and much later Copland pieces, where the style shifts a little bit, but still, you know, those personal touches they're still recognizable. And that's what makes a great composer, you know, you to have a style without repeating yourself too much and always reinvent your own style and say something. I think the major thing about this piece is it has won a Pulitzer Prize when it was written. It was the, you know, the greatest American composition of that year. And there's a reason for that, because it's saying something, you know. Mm-hmm. There's I don't like to use the word message, because, you know, art is art, but you kind of feel what he's trying to tell you, and maybe you decode it for yourself and say, well, okay, what you just described, that you're driving and suddenly you see the skyline, and but also I think after Second World War this piece had a very particular meaning to Americans.
Well, in fact, that's Copland himself said, I'm satisfied that my Third Symphony stands for what I wanted to say at the time. The musical ideas that came to me or that I chose were appropriate for the particular purpose of the work. Yeah. And it was meant to be celebratory.
Yeah. Shamelessly hopeful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. See, I'm hearing the wide open Copland spaces again. You know, I'm hearing the prairie.
Yeah.
Aaron Copland's Third Symphony. Leonard Bernstein says this symphony has become an American monument, like the Washington Monument or the Lincoln Memorial. And Sean Rittenhour was just saying that this piece is kind of trendy this year.
Yeah. It seems that every group I play with and with any frequency is doing Copland 3, which makes me very happy. It's one of my favorite pieces.
And you can hear it live. The concert begins at 7:30 at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall. More information is at hso.org or 256-539-4818, beginning at 7:30. But there's more. You have a masterclass going on this afternoon, Sean.
Yes, masterclass at 4 p.m. If you're a percussionist or just curious about percussion, please come by and hear me try to shed some light to some younger players.
And these are open to the public. You can just walk into the concert hall. I used to go with my son when he was playing the violin. I got to go for free to see Philip Quint work with students. So when you work with students, what do you work on? What are you looking for in a student?
Well, it depends on the level of the student and also how much time you have. So oftentimes if you hear them play something very fancy, but an issue is about fundamentals, you know, something that can help everything in their playing, then you focus on that. And if it's something where you're like, you know, I just want to help them work on this piece for this moment, then you might get a little bit more specific. Mm-hmm. But I tend to be the kind of teacher that finds that the foundational skills of playing will be the thread through everything you play. So I try to focus on those sort of qualities.
And you have a new endeavor in teaching.
I do. I do. I teach at Hofstra University on Long Island, just outside of New York City. And we worked very hard, me and Pablo Riepi, my partner in crime, who's the percussionist in the New York City Ballet. We have started a new summer program for young percussionists, 7th through 12th grade. It is a 2-week long commuter or residence option at Hofstra University for just any level of interest in percussion, as long as you can read music and are gung-ho. We have world-renowned guest artists, six guest master classes. We'll be doing classes all day long. We'll have percussion ensemble concert. We'll have a soloist concert. It's just 2 weeks of intense percussion fun, and we're even going to go into New York City to see a Broadway show and tour some of the conservatories.
And you have some experience with that, too, in Broadway.
Yes. Yeah.
Would you rather play in the pit or on the stage with a bunch of stuff?
Ooh. Well, I think I prefer being seen. No, I like,
because you're definitely being heard. Yeah. There's no problem with that.
Yeah, no, I like a little bit of everything. So I mean, that's why I sort of focus my career in New York, because you get a little bit of taste of everything, mm-hmm. rather than just in an orchestra or just in Broadway. Or
so when you were a kid, did you really get on your mom's nerves? Banging on things.
Who didn't? I don't know. You don't have to be a percussionist. Mom's nerves. I think every kid is a natural born percussion player. You know, it's just like hitting things and creating sound by just hitting something is. No?
I mean, we're
born with that.
Yeah.
And we humans.
Yeah. I think that, you know, there's bigger houses in Ohio, so I could just go hide in the basement. You know, I mean, it was that kind of thing. It wasn't too bothersome. My parents were actually pretty open with it.
Talking about hiding in the basement,
yeah.
We have a Casual Classics coming up. Oh, you want to talk about that?
Yeah.
It's all percussion this month. I don't know what happened to me allowing this, but it is happening.
Next Sunday, we have Percussion Galore, which is a percussion chamber music concert, which is a bit of a labor of love, because we are going to rehearse all week this week, gearing up for this. And we're going to play what I would like to call the hits of
I get it.
Of,
I see what you did there.
Yeah, the percussion ensemble hits for this next
It'll
Sunday.
Be a smash.
Yeah, exactly. There's an endless amount of jokes in there.
Sorry, I'll stop.
But it's going to be a great concert. The percussionist in Huntsville, the members of the section will be playing the concert, and it's they're all extraordinary musicians coming from Chattanooga, New York City, down in Florida as well, the members of this section. So it's going to be an amazing concert and really accessible and challenging all at once. And just if you have any interest in percussion, I think you will find something that you will walk out very pleased with having heard. Featuring music by John Cage, Paul Lansky, to name a few, and even a little Gustav Holst.
And if you've never been to a Casual Classic program, the secret is in the name. It's casual.
Yeah.
No intermission, and Sean is going to be talking.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm looking at him right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. No,
I hope he will. Okay. In between pieces, so you get to learn about instruments, and you get to learn about the pieces that are being played, and also you get to learn about successful fundraising we have done with the symphony, because this Casual Classics is actually to feature all the new percussion instruments we purchased.
We started a fundraiser last year to sort of up our game in the percussion inventory at the symphony. And
yeah,
we
propane
done,
tanks ain't cheap.
Yeah, no, they're not. We've done very well, and we're almost to our goal, but this concert is sort of to celebrate where we've gotten so far and thank those who have donated and made it possible to.
And if you're not a regular concert goer, the percussion is fascinating to watch.
Yes, it's absolutely a visual medium. It's totally worth checking out. We hope to see you there, especially after, you know, if you can't make it to this weekend's concert, this is your chance to get your dose of percussion.
And if you're like me and you can't stay up until 7:30, there's an open rehearsal at 11 o'clock on Saturday morning.
Yes, it's very affordable. And I like to say that sometimes it's more interesting than the concert.
I find it fascinating because you get to watch how Gregory works with the musicians and how the musicians interact and see how the process happens. And for me, it makes me appreciate the finished product even more.
And we do that every time, you know, between January and May, we have these sneak preview concerts on Saturdays at 11, which I think is, you know, you get up not too early on a Saturday, you get your coffee and you go to the VBC and you listen to AJSO rehearsing for the concert that same evening. And the program is, again, Gershwin Cuban Overture, Andy Akiho Concerto.
Percussion just Concerto.
It's called Percussion Concerto. And the Third Symphony by Aaron Copland.